miles away, and they would just drive you nuts. They would call you and call you and call you, and they wouldn't give up until you agreed to come to a campus event that makes it look like to military personnel that, you know, they're a legitimate school and they have the backing of the military, Department of Defense, VA, VBA. And to this date, I can't find where anybody got a refund. I think it was just a write-off, and they still got you scamming you for all these schools that you have to pay the loan
for. You have to apply for something. They do a credit check. Did they see what your future job prospects were going to be? What is that process? Green card, and I'm going for my 10-year green card. I literally have to sell my kidneys for that. And as I'm doing so, I am waiving any, and I really want to emphasize on this, I'm waiving any right to any financial aid from any institution. So I'll never get financial support if I become homeless, jobless. I don't have any right. Hello, everyone. Today at Fearless Wealth, we have a unique guest. As per usual, it's your favorite opinionated legendary Amerislav. And today with us, we have a veteran that I recently met through Twitter, which is X, still call it Twitter forever, communications and kind of the groups within that wide web. Good afternoon, good morning, veteran.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here. So, again, just because you and I are fairly fresh in, you know, our communication history, to give you an idea on why this podcast came to be, I'm going into my third year right now. I had a break for a little over half a year. We have about 1,000 listeners per episode within the first week, and then the numbers kind of like stack up. But my thing was that I have traveled the world. I've been to 48 countries, 45 states. I'm from East Europe. And traveling is a thing that connects you with other people, shows you different aspects of life and different walks of life. And the podcast was kind of the idea, because most people don't have that luxury to just, you know, go hop around the world. So the initial with the podcast was to bring different people onto the platform so we can skip the traveling and still get the exposure and the communication and the conversations and the subjects and topics that are important in a chaotic world like we have right now. So that's the background for the podcast.
Okay.
And tell us about you. Who are you? You are a veteran. What's your background? What do you stand for? Just go, and if you see me write, it's because I'm asking, like I'm writing down questions or points to refer to later on.
Okay. Number one, I am a resident of Missouri, which is a state in the middle of the United States. It's generally a very poor state, normally Republican-based. I was an extremely poor child growing up, very rural Missouri. And the military loves us rural poor kids because we know how to shoot. They don't have to teach us how to shoot. We learn how to shoot growing up just for recreation or sometimes even to eat. So there was very little job prospects in my area. So when I graduated, I joined the Navy. I was originally trying to join the Air Force. At that time, I had a little bit of asthma, but the asthma was from being on a farm with all the weeds and all the trees and all the allergens. But I joined the Navy. The Navy has more aircraft than everybody else. And I ran around. My initial intentions was to retire from the Navy, but my job title, what we would call an MOS, was 125% overmanned. So what that means was once you got to a certain level, you would never put on the next stripe. And if you can't put on the next stripe in advance, you will hit what they call high time and rank, and the military will kick you out, even though you did nothing wrong. You're hitting high time and rank because you're not advancing. But you can't advance because there's too many people in your job title just jamming up the entire works. So I did 8 years, and where this gets really messed up as As I was exiting the military, my exiting instructor kept talking about ITT Tech. That's all we did for like several days was him telling us ITT Tech is the best. Why should you go to school? Why should you go to a regular college and waste all your time on prerequisites? You know, you need to go to someplace like ITT Tech. And I'm in my mid-50s, and ITT Tech at that time, as this exiting instructor is preaching it, this exiting instructor probably, most likely, was working on the side for for-profit schools like them. The exiting instructor had merchandise, he had pamphlets, he had t-shirts, and he just kept showing us these videos over and over that he taped. So once I got out of the military, within a couple of days, I start getting easily over 10 calls a day from my local ITT Tech, which was about 90 miles away. And they would just drive you nuts. They would call you and call you and call you, and they wouldn't give up until you agreed to come to a campus event. Then once you got to a campus event, you know, it was almost like Disneyland, especially for me, because I went from very rural Missouri to the military, so I have no real life experience. I don't know what anything is. And since I grew up so secluded, I don't really understand irony or sarcasm or some of the other things or some of the other social cues that I probably would have caught this being an issue. So at the open Opus campus event, as a veteran, you're the number one target. For some of the links that I provided, one was a picture. And the picture is what we call a 90-10 rule. For every veteran they manage to scam, they get money for 9 more people. So if I can capture a veteran, the bad schools literally get funds for 9 more people. So it made veterans number one targets. And if you don't believe that, all the schools that once they lost the GI Bill, all the schools that once they lost it, they folded under 2 months and went bankrupt because the veteran was the number one target. So I go to the open house event, and they show me stats like 98% job placement and massive job growth for my degree. And, you know, they show you all these beautiful stats, but some of it was blatant lies, like, you know, your credits will transfer to any school, you know, and, you know, we're this school and we're the heartbeat of technology and everybody hires from us. So they laid on pretty thick. But what makes it worse was the government. The schools would literally tell the government, you know, hey, we got a 98% rate. You know, you need to show that. You need to print out specs. So the government just printed out a lot of documents for all these schools without validating that if this all these statements were true or not. And of course, all these statements were false. But these statements were used against us because we actually thought, well, if the government says the school is good, it must be a good school. Then also, I did the extra stuff on the side. I called VA. I said, hey, is this school good? You know, is this a good degree? And every time I called the VA, they always said, oh, that school's the best. You know, you can't do any wrong. So
And what does VA stand for, just for my and the listener's reference?
Veterans Administration and Veterans Benefit Administration. But they're actually part of the scam, that a lot of this, you don't really realize something's wrong until, especially with me, 4 days after I graduate with a bachelor's degree in electronic engineering, I go out with my DD-214, my military discharge papers that says I have an honorable discharge. That always looks good. Then I have my resume that I'm top 3 in my class with a bachelor's degree in electronic engineering. Then I start getting asked to leave interviews, and people are laughing, and they point at you, and they rip up your resume in front of you, and you don't realize it. Then you get caught on very quickly that you've been scammed, that you're schooling is worthless. Nobody recognizes your school. Nobody will hire you to work in your field of study. And now you're in trouble because besides you lost your GI Bill, you got massive school debt. You got, even with us, even back then, we still had $30,000 that we have to pay back. But how do you pay back $30,000 when you're making minimum wage and you're trying to stay alive and you have other things going on? So the scam against the veteran starts at the very, very beginning, that there's active duty personnel on base that is stealing your information and selling it to the diploma mills and scam schools. These bad schools also have concerts on base to make it look like they're more legitimate. These schools also hand out what we call challenge coins. They look like big, thick quarters or half a dollars that makes it look like to military personnel that, you know, they're a legitimate school and they have the backing of the military, Department of Defense, VA, VBA. So they're really putting it on thick, and nobody realizes that it's just a huge scam. So after they steal your GI Bill and push a predatory loan on you, they got you, and you can't get out of it because there's no protections.
So I feel like, just for your reference, I'm from a former communist country. So me and like country daddies, governments are very like, we do not, like, I'm very anti-government for that. Okay. And in America, which is a very like prosperous nation in and of itself, I feel like the situation that you are explaining here to me is so anti-human, and in this specific case, so anti-veteran. So one of my first questions that pop up is like, when was this method, this scammy bill first introduced, if we know, under what administration, and who's making the benefit, who's making the profit in this model?
Well, the scam started as early as like the 1945 area. Mm-hmm. When the GI Bill was first handed out to help veterans coming back from war to prosper, to build themselves up. And about the time the government started handing out GI Bills or money toward tuitions is when people started figuring out, hey, let's make a scam school and let's steal this stuff. So it all started out mid-40s and progressively got worse. The people who win from this are your politicians who have ties to predatory loans, and the politicians who accept all these campaign contributions from all these bad schools. When a bad school comes to town, the first people they do is they go and grease the palms of all the politicians and pay them off, buy them off, so there's nobody to fight against them. And if they're really good, in several instances, you can look it up on the internet, that when a school came to town and they wanted area to build a campus on, they greased up, look, they went to the local politicians and paid them off. Then they used eminent domain and took away family farms and other areas away from other people to build a campus, and just used the politician for themselves to gain profit. So the politician makes money, the predatory loan people make money. There's a lot of dark money involved because the bad schools will give to both sides just to make sure they got their bases covered. Then all your local politicians, there's just a lot of money involved floating around that that's happening from them scamming people.
I'm just gonna like interfere with a personal feeling question around this. Do you okay. believe or feel that this, the bill was initially initiated with good intention, but kind of went rogue afterwards, or do you feel there was bad intention already from the get-go?
No, I think when the GI Bill originally came out in the mid-40s, it had really good intentions, but very, very quickly, people saw that it wasn't written down with very tight language, so it was easy to start picking it apart and profiting from it illegally. Then, over time, it just got worse as they learned how to exploit more of it. And since there was no justice, or nobody was really doing their job to rein it in, it just got out of control. Barrow's defense ended up to be in about 151 schools on the Barrow's defense list that scammed students and veterans. And it, for the most part, they got away with it.
Was there at any point any party or, you know, collective effort of going after the scammers? Because I realize that, that's the part of the shitty part of the justice system, that it requires a lot of resources to go after the bad guys, which often kind of is lacking, obviously.
Well, one of the links I sent you that shows, in the link is from VES, Veterans Education Success. And it shows that there was a 1974 ban placed upon the VA. And the 1974 ban that was placed upon them pretty much just said, do not do businesses with schools that have deceptive advertising and that have poor gainful employment and, you know, schools that are just scammish or in nature that's just out to steal GI bills but not give the person anything that, that they can use. But the VA never really paid attention to the 1974 ban. And it even went worse that the VA didn't do their job of vetting these schools. And over time, the VA themselves was trying to get litigation going for themselves that allowed them to work with the schools directly against the veterans so they can make money on the side for themselves and just throw the veterans out to the wolves and let them be scammed. But besides the 1974 ban, there's something called FTC, Federal Trade Commission, that, you know, the laws that were broken were very evident, but nobody stepped up and did nothing about it. So the Federal Trade Commission, you can see that we have a negative return on our investment, that, you know, I lost well over $75,000 initially. And since I never worked in my field, I never made the big money. So the difference between minimum wage and what I should have been making, especially over a 25-year period, is about $500,000 that I lost out on. Well, this is just, you know, nobody stepped up to do their job. Not FTC, not the Federal Trade and Exchange Security people, not the VA. You know, they were just allowing people to do whatever they want with this, and nobody got in trouble. Even the Department of Education through now we have Cardona. Nobody has prosecuted a CEO or a CFO of a big scam school. Nobody ever got in trouble. And those people that like the CEOs like Kevin Muldaney of ITT Tech, yeah, he got in trouble, but he got a few tiny little fines, but he got to keep his multiple millions in bonuses for scamming people. And I guess that's okay as long as you give enough campaign contributions to the right people. You know, they'll just look the other way.
If we for a second can what I call like timeline jump, as a fresh immigrant in the U.S., my only reference, and I feel that it's a lot for a lot of people who just don't know a lot of this side of America. So my only reference of how veterans are recruited is what I've seen in movies, ironically, right? So you have like a rural place and like a cool buff guy comes into the school and he does his talk. How did that look for you? How did the recruiting look for you? What were your back then your, you know, future opportunity prospects? Walk me through that if you can.
Well, the recruiter didn't look for me. I looked for the recruiter. I had a very bad home life, so I was trying to escape, and I did. I found a recruiter. I signed up. There's something called MEPS, Military Enlisted Personnel Center. And it's one of the funniest things actually goes on for people who ever go into the military. I'll explain in a minute, but you go to the MEPS, you take some basic tests, you get signed up for the military, and I was gone within a couple of weeks, hopefully for a better life, but that didn't really ever work out. MEPS, the Military Enlisted Personnel Center, is probably the only place that you'll ever go into that once you walk into the building, you literally strip down to into your underwear, and you run around the entire day in your underwear. It's a kind of hilarious. It's like it's something that you'll never see unless you were actually were in the military. But the they had multiple offices. In between the offices, they would have like red tape or blue tape, and you go into an office and they'd ask you a question, or you do a little paperwork, and they would go, okay, now take the red tape to the next office. You would do something, and you would go to the next office. But for like, you know, 8 hours, you're literally running around in your underwear. And if you were one of those people who showed up without underwear, they put you into an adult diaper. People that we laughed at while we're running around in our underwear, but it's hilarious for like the strangest reasons that you would never like go to Walmart and everybody would be running around your underwear. But I found a recruiter. I signed up. I was trying to fix me because nobody else was trying to fix me. And It just turned into a bigger scam later.
At what point did you realize, because you shared about, you know, your resume being ripped up in front of you, people laughing at you. At what point did you realize it was a scam? Because I can imagine, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that, you know, the first few times you're like, oh, this is like, you know, it must be these people or that's wrong with them. They're just shitty people. They're bullies. They're just unfriendly people. I must have bumped into the wrong people. And at what point did you realize, oh no, like this whole thing was a scam. I've been scammed out of this.
About 4 days later, I graduated. I took a couple days off. I have all my paperwork and I start going to interviews, and I didn't realize at the time, but there's an ITT tech in St. Louis, Missouri. So, you know, I see their perspective that like twice a year, all these people graduate spring or fall, and all these businesses just get hammered with all these students who have these dreams and have all these big ideas that the school has told them that, you know, you can do this, that, and the other, and you're going to make a ton of money and everybody wants you. So they kind of have a chip on their shoulder, and they start walking into these businesses for interviews. And all these businesses across the St. Louis area are done. They've had too many dirt bags, too many people who got certificates or degrees that had no idea what they were doing. So the entire area is done with the school, and the school has really let down the area. So that's, and they don't realize they're being mean, but they're just tired of, you know, Joe Smiley walking through the door thinking, you know, they're the best, and they just, that's why the school became unrecognized. And it was unrecognized in the mid to late 90s that nobody cared about that school anymore. And that quickly went across the nation. So us having a degree from that school didn't mean anything. And since they were totally aggravated that twice a year, all these people were bothering them, literally, they were no longer being nice. They were just, you know, get out. You're wasting my time. You know, here's your crappy resume, or I'll just throw away. It's worthless anyway. Then that's how we found out the rough way.
How is that bill still in effect or active right now? And what does it look like right now? Is it still the same, you know, scammy schools recruiting or, you know, marketing their scam school? Has it changed or evolved into different names or industries? What are we looking at right now?
Well, the GI Bill that originally came out in the mid-40s, over time has evolved. It was called, I believe, VEEP for a little while, for like Vietnam veterans. Mine was what they called the Montgomery GI Bill, that only the veteran could use that GI Bill. Then from there, it evolved to a better GI Bill called the Forever GI Bill, where my Montgomery GI Bill, only I could use it. If I got the Forever GI Bill, my kids could use it, my wife, you know, other people could use my benefits till my benefits were used up. So there is a congresswoman named Delia Ramirez, and she put in for us to get our GI bills back that were stolen. The legislation is called H.R. 1767, It's made it through all the groups, but it still hasn't got voted on by Congress, or, you know, it's not totally done yet. And it only has about a 40% chance or less to make it. But that would greatly help us. But if it gives us our own GI bills back, our Montgomery GI bills, you know, time we got decimated by the school, all the predatory loans, and got all that paid off and managed to pay it off, we can't go back to school. We can't afford to go back to school. And our Montgomery GI bill was just good for us, nobody else. So it didn't really help. If we do win, we get the forever GI bill, then our kids or other people that we couldn't help get to school because ourselves, we were only making minimum wage or low wages, that would greatly help us. At least, you know, that's the way it should be.
A side note, because you mentioned several times predatory loans, right?
Yes.
And I feel there is the, because, you know, loans are obviously a big, especially student debt loans, school loans, are a big topic of conversation. And I would like you to illustrate how it differentiates between a student debt loan versus a, you know, car loan. Because as you know, if you want to get a loan for a car, it's quite, now I don't want to say hard, but it's not easy, right? You have to have certain credit. You have people have to back you up. And what I'm learning more and more is that the institutions or corporations that are giving out these student loans, they operate in a completely different manner. Could you elaborate something on how that went for you? Like, did you have to apply for something? Did they do a credit check? Did they see what your future job prospects were going to be? What is that process?
Well, they don't care about your future job prospect because there's a very good chance that when you get one of these predatory loans, you will pay on it for the rest of your life. These predatory loans, especially for veterans, is part of the scam. That three-fourths of the way through your degree, you're working on a 3 or 4 year degree in a very specific field. The scam schools know that three-fourths of the way through, that they will on purposely burn up your GI bill. And when they burn it up, they will make you retake classes, or they'll say this class isn't good enough to graduate anymore. They'll do something to eat your GI bill up. So after they eat your GI bill up, the VA will tell you, well, just sign the paperwork and, you know, we'll get you a loan. So, you know, you still don't know anything about how all this process works, but they sign you up for a predatory loan. My loan was for $30,000, not including FAFSAs and grants and other things that they would also steal. But my $30,000 loan wasn't a single loan. It was chopped up into 11 individual loans to put the most amount of damage monetarily wise to make me pay the most possible for that loan. So they took that $30,000 loan and chopped it up into 11 individual loans and just kept raising the interest rate and hammering you on it. But the nature of the predatory loans is there is no bankruptcy rights. You cannot bankrupt on a student loan, veteran or regular student. It doesn't matter. There's also a problem where there's a spousal type of loan, that there's been a law change that you're married to your spouse and your spouse has $100,000 in loan that they'll never get out of. But if your spouse doesn't pay on it, it forces you to pay on it. A husband and wife or whatever the situation is can use this as a weapon against each other. And even though the law has been changed, the law hasn't been implemented. So that is still going on. There's a horrible thing called child plus kind of a loan that, you know, you're a kid, you're poor, you know, your grandpa or grandma or parents or somebody co-signed for that loan. And you didn't finish school, or you finished school, but you just can't pay on it. It puts them on the hook, same predatory hook, that they can't get out from underneath the loan, and they can't go bankrupt. And it's just a horrible thing. How all this changes that if you buy a car, you have a set interest rate, You have set payments. You can go bankrupt and just give them the car back. You're probably going to take a hit on your credit score, but you can give them the car back, or you can sell the car and finance the difference between what it was worth and what you sold it for. There's multiple ways to get out of a car loan or a house loan, but these predatory loans have no way of getting out except death. And even death is being qualified that you have to be stage four cancer, literally digging the hole that you're going to rest yourself in, and they will still fight you until you close your eyes and they put dirt on top of you and still make you pay. They will take away your taxes, garnish your wages. You cannot ever get out from underneath these loans. In multiple ways, they're just going to win. They're going to get you. And that's horrible because one of the things I can post or tell you about, there was a woman named Ann. Ann, when she was 93 years old, the Department of Education suddenly, and to make it look good, finally forgave her loans. Well, Ann, I believe it was 1987, wanted to be a paralegal, and she literally got like a $12,000 loan to be a paralegal. Well, she got her loan, and she paid on it. She paid over 11 times the original amount off, and she was still paying on her loan. And she couldn't get underneath her loan. Even at 93, they finally said, okay, you don't have to pay anymore. And while they were using her as a political pawn, saying, look what we did for her, only thing I saw was, why did you let it go that far? She could have had a much better retirement. She could have had better food. She could have lived in a better house if you guys weren't, you know, literally taking her to the grave before you gave her, let her off of her loan that you, you know, enslaved her into. So it's very, very horrible that when you hear about these predatory loans, it doesn't matter if these kids have good credit scores or not. It's just going to hunt them for the rest of their lives, and there's no way out.
So just for the listeners, I meanwhile was looking up the GI Bill and how, you know, Google describes it. Mm-hmm. And Google says if you're entitled to 100% of your post 9/11 GI Bill benefits, we'll cover the full cost of tuition and fees, $22,000, which already I know it's not the full cost of the tuition because most tuitions cost significantly more. If you're entitled to 70%, we'll cover $15,000, and it's based on the total amount of time you served on active duties, and then there's a whole calculation on that. So already within that, as someone, like, I speak a lot about money, I speak a lot about, you know, career, making a better life for yourself. Even the way they word that, where they initially start with, we'll pay your full intuition, and then you have to search further. Oh, caveat, it's only $22,000, not the full.
Yes.
So it's already like, it already starts kind of sneaky. One thing that I saw in your tweets was the veteran or the relief versus debt. I have to see how you worded that. Because there's a lot of conversation right now about student loan relief, right? What's your take on that and your perspective?
On student loans, how they came about, or can you be more specific?
Oh, about how presidents right now are marketing specifically to have all, or not all the debt, but a big portion of the debt. They use the term relief, but that it gets excused, that you don't have to pay it back.
Okay. First of all, what I'm going to say is, in my humble opinion, that takes the ability for us to be sued over what I'm about to read to say, but it is in my opinion. So how this played out is in multiple directions. First of all, Joe Biden said, hey, you guys got scammed. We will give you X amount of dollars. Then he couldn't find the memo, and the memo was the talking point. You know, as soon as I find that memo, we'll get you guys your refund, or, you know, we'll help you. So eventually that kind of went away, and it just turned into a scam that Biden got a whole bunch of votes for what he wanted for, and he never delivered on the promises of, you know, here's the money, to help you or whatever. And the scam kind of grew that there was never going to be a amount of money ever given out. It was going to be relief, and that was only for people who were making payments. But if you already paid off your stuff or another in different variations of that, they were going to scam you out of that. They pretty much stole your vote for a nifty promise. Now, that's the Joe Biden side of it. And it seemed to be that what they were doing was slow, intentionally slow, kind of like you go to a high school play and you watch, you know, some kind of the play, and the other actors are not catching on to the lines. That the Democrats did this, then they kind of stalled for a while, then they let the Republicans jump in and scream about it, that both sides were pretty much just playing students for loans. Now, the Republican side of this was, there's a movie called Fail State. I recommend everybody watch Fail State, and you will see that in this movie, it's a documentary, how politicians, legislation, over time, slowly changed a word or two in different bills, different laws, and they made it where they could scam people. And it wasn't just Republicans, it was also Democrats. So both sides are kind of against us. You will see me posting things against Donald Trump, not because of was he cheated out of his election or anything else. My biggest issue with what happened there was Betsy DeVos, in my opinion, bought her own position as Secretary of Education. She spent over $4 million and gave it to the Republicans. They let her be Secretary of Ed. Betsy DeVos has a lot of ties into for-profit schools and the loan industry. She's already a multi-billionaire. She has billions, literally her family does. And while she was making, I believe, as Secretary of Education, she should have made about $175,000 a year while in office. But for her term in office, she profited over $244 million. So she was definitely had a really good side deal going on. So the original borrower's defense that I signed up for, I'm an original class action member of borrower's defense, the very first borrower's defense, when it was DeVos, then DeVos changed it with Trump. So DeVos changes all the rules. They tried to change the rules back. Trump vetoes HJ Res 76. And from then on, nobody really gets anything. They don't get refunds. They get relief. Well, if you went to school or was even in the process of going to school and you owed $80,000, well, that's fine for the school. But what they did with borrower's defense, and let me say this again, this is my perspective of how I see it, that the original borrower's defense and 151 bad schools, from what I'm reading, that the schools were on the tab or the schools had a burden of paying somewhere between $11 billion to $13 billion back to these students. Now, through Betsy DeVos changing the rules, the United States of America took on the burden of that $11 to $13 billion, roughly, from what I can find. And they changed the scope of it that, yes, they did pardon or relieved the amount you owe to the school, but they broke away those amounts away from the private loans, the Sallie Mae's, Lake, Moen. And once they broke that away from the schools, that even though you don't have to pay the school anymore, you're thousands of dollars, but you're still stuck on the same predatory loan for the rest of your life that you can't get out of because you still got to pay Sallie Mae, Navient, Moen, Lake, for all these private FFELP loans that you signed up for, that they didn't relieve you out of. And to this date, I can't find where anybody got a refund. I think it was just a write-off, and they still got you scamming you for all these schools that you have to pay the loans on that they forced you into. So, you know, the school still won. The students still lost multiple ways, and it's still a big mess. and the veterans were the first people to be kicked out of this. I was told that there is a few veterans, I don't know exactly how many, that got some relief of this. But I served 8 years for my GI Bill. Then after my GI Bill and serving for that, during that time frame when you're in the military, you're losing your hearing, you're messing up your knees, your back, you've been exposed to multiple chemicals. There's all these horrible things that are happening to you while you're in the military just to get a GI Bill. And even if they did relieve it immediately, you can't get that money back. And there's no provisions in the law to give you your GI Bill back. And you're still stuck paying on these private FFLP loans that you can't get out from underneath. So politically, sometimes it looks good, but realistically, nobody really ever got helped. If you paid a good chunk toward your schooling, then it finally got relieved. The robber robbed you, and the robber doesn't have to give the money back.
Right. And you made a very good tweet about that a few days ago, and I'm going to read it to the listeners. Refund means you're getting back all or a part of an amount of money, whereas relief, you're not getting back anything, but the politicians kept your part of the campaign contributions. The school got all the money, the CEO and CFO kept all the money, bonuses for conning you, the loan companies kept everything, right? So the very different angle between refund and relief, and everyone's like, yay, relief, and you're kind of like, well, relief isn't, like, that's perhaps the beginning of the conversation, but that's not sufficient enough.
No, not at all.
Right. And the image you sent me, and I'm gonna, for the viewers, I'm gonna put it on the screen, is the 90-10 loophole, where it's an image saying for every service member of or veteran enrolled at a for-profit college and paying with GI Bill or Department of Defense fund, that college can enroll 9 more students who are using nothing but federal dollars.
Correct.
Again, as an anti-government person, this pisses me off so much. How can we prevent this from continuing? I've heard we briefly talked about this, and you shared how no one is paying attention. No one's giving this attention. What would your message be to people who are, either going into service or who are in service and, contemplating going to school, et cetera, et cetera? What do you want to say to them?
Number one, if you're going to use your GI Bill, do not believe the VA or the VBA when it comes to a school. Do your own private research, not just on the internet, because let me try to change the angle a little bit.
Sure.
If I go to a car lot and I want to buy a car, I don't care what piece of crap is on the car lot with 4 tires on it. They're going to tell me that's the best car. That's what you need, sir. That's the best car. They're out to sell you something. You want to know what best car to buy? You go find yourself 10, 15 different mechanics and go, tell me what you never worked on. And the mechanic will go, well, I rarely ever work on a Toyota because those are really good cars. I rarely ever, ever work on a Honda. Those are really good cars. Then that gives you a better idea of what direction you need to be going. So as a veteran or somebody's getting out of the military soon, do not believe the Veterans Administration or the Veterans Benefit Administration. They're there to sell you a car. So you need to go to whatever field that you're entering, you need to go to employers, HRs, contact multiple people and say, do you recommend this school? Well, do you hire from this school? How does this school line up with other colleges that you might be hiring, people from? Attack it totally from a totally backwards angle, because the way we attacked it and the way we were taught to attack it doesn't work, and it actually helps the scammers to use ourselves against ourselves. It's really a horrible thing for you to pay for your own perpetual poverty. So attack it in that direction.
Yeah, that's a great phrase. It's horrible for you to pay for your perpetual poverty. Whew, because that's literally what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry for interrupting.
It's okay. And when it comes to the 90-10 rule, the 90-10 rule only started about 1997 to 1998. Before the 90-10 rule, there was an 85-15 rule that it wasn't as easy as, like, you know, for every veteran you get 9 more people for free. At that point, it was, you know, for every veteran you got 8.5 people for free. But they kind of changed it around a little bit. And when they did, they made it much easier to scam veterans left and right. And everybody was in on it, and nobody bothered to tell the veteran.
Do you feel this can be prevented now? Like, because you made it your cause to speak about this a lot, right? Bring awareness on, like, yo, I'm waving the flags here. Y'all need to pay attention. This is going wrong. And this could be prevented by people doing their own research and not falling for the scammy schools, but using it for, like, what we call it, real schools, real education. I'm not sure what terminology to use.
It would be a real school, schools that have ability to actually accredit the schools. Those credits could be transferred from one school to another. Schools that had meaning in the eyes of employers and corporations, not, you know, we were really scammed in multiple directions. And once they hurt us, they also hurt our families. That we can't pay for our kids to go to school because we don't want them to join the military, because we know that, you know, our lifespan is probably going to be about a half as much for all the chemicals and other stuff that we were exposed to. We want something better for our children.
And accredited, and, like, I'm using air quotes right now, normal schools or real schools, they, like, you can use your GI Bill for that, right? It's not that they give you a list, like, you can only go to these schools. Like, it's usable for every school. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yes, but that's where the VA horribly failed everybody. That when I called the VA and I said, hey, I want to go to this school, the person on the end of the line should have said, hold on, sir, give me a minute. Oh, yes, sir, I just looked up your school. I'm sorry, your school has poor gainful employment. They lie about accreditation. You know, I'm sorry, as the VA, we're looking out for you, and we will not allow that school to take your GI Bill. But they didn't do that. They were, oh, they're the best. You know, yeah, you need to go there. So the VA and the VBA were in on it from the get-go. And they didn't. They're still not doing their job. There's some place called University of Phoenix. I'm sure you heard of University of Phoenix. That it's another, in my humble opinion, another ITT tech. That they're just getting people, and once people leave there, they're not getting jobs like they should be. All this is in my humble opinion, but there's something, VES, Veterans Education Success, they're a really nice group, good group. Every year, they generally have something called Storm the Hill, where they invite all the veterans to go to D.C. for a week, and we go talk to congressmen and senators and try to make them aware of all this to show them what's going on with us, real people. For the most part, when I went, nobody really cared. We ran into one congressman who kind of cared, but, you know, after talking to about 15, one out of 15 is not going to get anything done. So it's money's talking, people who influence with money, you know, it's still. Then there's no justice. Nobody is stepping up because they don't want to be in trouble or stick out like a sore thumb or lose their position. So, no, you know, your different attorney generals and nobody's standing up and saying, hey, you scam my people. We want refunds. We need, you know, validation. Mm-hmm. There is no justice.
One of my biggest frustrations with the political spectrum worldwide, by the way, this is not America related right now, is that the speed of media, social media and legacy media, is that it's focusing on these absolutely irrelevant things as talking points, like fucking pronouns, pardon my French. So where everyone's debating whether or not pronouns should be, you know, mandated or whatever. And I'm like, there's a hierarchy of problems that needs to be discussed. And the actual problems, which I would consider this being one of it, is like being buried somewhere under the frivolous, like, and it's just like, how are we letting this happen? How are we all like talking about Taylor Swift while we should be solving the country, the nation?
There's no money involved in fixing the nation. As long as they divide people against each other, Republican, Democrat, hillbilly, black versus white, Asian, the government keeps the pot stirred. And long as they can keep the pot stirred, we don't get together as a unified force to try to fix anything. So they, and there's only a handful of billionaires that own all the media, and all the media is pretty much directed by, oddly enough, the Democrats, but that doesn't matter. And they just keep stirring the pot and shifting stuff around and deflecting people's attention, and nothing really ever gets fixed. And that's what they do. And what I say, it doesn't matter, because in my world, Democrat and Republican are both work for the same people, the 1%, the super elites, the big banksters, whatever, that, you know, if I give you two people to vote for in whatever kind of election, and you vote for the one you think is best, then it doesn't matter to me, because if I'm the puppet master and I got strings on both of them, you didn't really vote at all. You just fell for one candidate over the other. So we need to really work on our democracy. And what I mean, we need to get some third party elections in there to totally change this, to straighten things up. If you have an R or a D by your name, you have already shown you're indoctrinated, or you are part of a very specific group of people who have shown over the last 30 years they don't care about you. And really at this point, we don't even know if your vote means anything when it comes to voting machines or anything else. So it kind of doesn't matter. The other thing I was wanting to mention, the very first people, this is Black History Month. So the very first people that were cheated out of the GI Bill was an enormous amount of black people coming out of the military. And we're talking mid-40s, 1945, 46, all these people are getting out of World War II. And you have all these people who fought for us. And they were cheated out of their GI Bills first. So as a black man or woman, they're both sides, male, female, did serve as nurses, fighting people, Rosie the Riveter, different variations of however they served. When they got out of the military in the mid-40s, and they didn't get to go do their GI Bill, they were instantly cheated out of a good social life, because they weren't allowed to get a degree. Then their kids couldn't get a degree. Then their kids couldn't get a degree. So the multiple generations were cheated out of bettering themselves and bettering the United States, because they weren't allowed to use their GI Bills from the mid-40s. And that's been blatantly wrong. They risked life and limb.
I asked you this in the Twitter DM as well. Do you foresee anything that is a civil war?
I actually do. And that's because, number one, there's an enormous amount of people have entered the country. And when they entered the country, and what it looks like, in my opinion, with support, that they have a phone, they have a credit card from the United Nations. Excuse me. They get, you know, like $2,500 a month. The VA and VBA took away our veterans, doctors and nurses to go care for them. They're going to be quickly set up to vote. So the American is being displaced right in front of our own eyes. And nothing's really being done about it but stall tactics. I don't see that's going to come out very well in any kind of direction. I do see but that's also another way to depopulate an enormous amount of people to start a war.
I'll grab every chance to emphasize how ridiculous the people crossing the border situation is. I am almost six figures in having to, in fees, attorneys I have my temporary green card. I have a 2-year green card and I'm going for my 10-year green card. Literally have to sell my kidneys for that. And as I'm doing so, I am waiving any, and I really want to emphasize on this, I'm waiving any right to any financial aid from any institution. So I'll never get financial support if I become homeless, jobless. I don't have any right to food stamps or anything. So to me, that people crossing the border get financial aid and, you know, get any support is absolutely like outrageous. And then we have a whole country that's already on the brink of poverty, collapse, whatever terminology we want to use. So it's so wild to me that's where we're at right now.
But that's part of the system that you can control by debt. And it's easier to control by debt than it is to control any other way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. What things did we not cover yet? I know you can probably talk about this for hours, but I want to be respectful of your time. What message do you want to spread? Anything?
Well, the first is a lot of, in the media is showing that if we relieve these kids, veterans, if we, you know, student relief, that the media is showing that the public will have to pay for it. And that's wrong. That extremely high 90s, like 98%, 99%, you know, it's almost always owned by the government. And the government has made so much money of making people pay for their loans and their school 2, 3, 4 times over. Sometimes we've found multiple times where people have paid 10, 11 times over their original amounts, and just interest, that the public will not pay for relief for these students. These students need relief because it doesn't do them any good to have a degree in something if they're so hammered by poverty, they can't enjoy life or actually accelerate. So there's no use for them to get the degree to begin with. So the public is not on tab, or the public will not have to pay for any of the student relief or cancellation of loans. The students themselves have been victimized multiple times over and over and over, and not being able to enjoy life, go on vacations, buy a house. They're just a great deal of their income is tied up into paying off massive amounts they can't pay off. There's a something called negative amortization, that even though they pay on, you know, $800 a month toward their degree, that because of negative amortization, the amount they're paying on is still slowly outpacing what they can pay. They cannot pay it off. And heaven forbid they get sick or have some kind of an emergency, their car breaks, or there's a big layoff. If something happens where these students have to have a deferment, the deferment by itself causes massive penalties and adds tens and tens and tens of thousands of dollars to their original loans that they couldn't pay off to begin with. So between the negative amortization and if there was any kind of deferment, then they're in trouble, but they're already stuck into a system they can't get out of. Trying to think, and it's not like a regular loan or anything. You just can't get out of it. And even being nearly dead at stage 4 cancer, you're still not allowed out of it. It's just a horrible situation. I don't know. There's no justice right now. And there's something called slabs. Slabs are the absolute most evil part of all of this. So what they do with slabs is they'll take, say, 5,000 people or a group of people that is paying on their loan, and they put all these loans together like a super loan, and they call it a slab, and they sell these slabs off. They sell the poverty off to somebody else, and they use it, and they make money on it, then they sell it off to somebody else. It's like virtual slavery with poverty against people who can't pay it off, because they get close to paying it off. Every time this stuff gets sold off to another person, and somebody buys these slabs, you know, they can raise the interest rate on it, and they can make it worse on them. And so that's where the evil comes in at. And the public doesn't understand. They're like, well, that just happened to you. No, it happens to you too. Because when the car manufacturers or the people who sell clothes and housing and stuff, if they can't sell it and move it in a reliable way, then the market stagnates. And right now there's over 45 million borrowers besides millions and millions of unknown people stuck in my kind of a situation with worthless degrees that we're sitting on money and we don't have much, but we're not going to spend it. So as the economy stagnates, it makes artificial inflation. So it runs up the price of gas, milk, goods, everything across the board. So if you don't think it's affecting you because you don't have a loan or you're not related to anybody who has a loan, it is affecting you because it's like somebody stealing from a store. Once they steal enough of something, they raise the price of everything by a few pennies and you're still paying for it. But we're doing this nationwide, and it's not just a few pennies. It's billions of dollars that affecting all Americans, because, you know, 1/4 of the Americans have been scammed or are being stuck in perpetual poverty by a loan that they can never pay off. And they're being punished for trying to better themselves.
Yeah. Well said. Yeah, well said. I will have all the links you sent me, and if you want to add any more links, I will have those in the description of the episode, and I will have them everywhere clickable. Is there anything more that we need to know for now?
No, if you guys think of anything, let me know. I will definitely talk to anyone that will hear me. Everybody needs to know that this is what's happening to your veterans. This is why there's... And the 22 a day amount for suicide is a joke. It's not 22 a day. There's two states in the United States that don't even report veteran suicide or military suicide. Then a lot of times law enforcement, especially if they know the veteran very well, that if they commit suicide, they will write it down as an accident, or they will do their best to make it be non-suicidal. So the family manages to get some kind of compensation or help, where if something's pure suicide, the family just suffers along with it. So the 22 a day is not a real number. 40 a day is probably a better number. And while recently we put 3 of our soldiers in harm's way, I can argue that we put them in harm's way on purpose. So they got killed. Then after they got killed, we multiple airstrikes and you know, let's fight another country. That's three. That was three in that day. We lose realistically 40 every day, easily over 8,000 a year, and nobody's batting an eye.
Yes, and we need to have more real conversations about, instead of worrying about what Taylor Swift was wearing at the Grammys or whatever. I don't know any of this, so that's why. Yeah, good. Thank you so much. Thank you for your openness and your honesty and your realness, because that's what's needed. We need to have conversations such as these to know what's going on around us so we can make more informed decisions and warn those.
I appreciate you having me on the podcast, and we could talk and try to, maybe a few people can learn to get away from the mass media and see what's really happening to everybody around them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you so much. I'll talk to you on Twitter. Don't hang up yet. I'm going to just close the recording, but thank you so much for being here.
Okay. Thank you.